Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, Chapter 5, Narada's Instructions on Srimad Bhagavatam, Text 34. Evam Nrinam Kriya Yoga Sarve Sankshiti Hetavaha Te Eva Atma Vinashaya Kalpante Kalpitaha Pare Evam Ninam Kriya Yoga Sarve Sankshiti Hetava Ta Evatma Vinashaya Kalpante Kalpitapare Evam Ninam Kriya Yoga Sarve Sankshiti Hetava Ta Evatma Vinashaya Kalpante Kalpitapare Evam Ninam Kriya Yoga Sarve Sankshiti Hetava Ta Evatma Vinashaya Kalpante Kalpitapare Evam Thus Ninam of the human being Kriya Yoga, all activities, Sarve, everyone, Sankshiti, material existence, Etavaha, causes, Te, that, Eva, certainly, Atma, the tree of work. Vinashaya, killing. Kalpante, being competent. Kalpitaha, dedicated. Pare, unto the transcendence. Translation. Thus, when all a man's activities are dedicated to the service of the Lord, those very activities which bondage become the destroyer of the tree of work.
Fruitive work, which has perpetually engaged the living being, is compared to the banyan tree in the Bhagavad Gita, for it is certainly very deeply rooted. As long as the propensity for enjoying the fruit of work is there, one has to continue the transmigration of the soul from one body or place to another, according to one's nature of work. The propensity for enjoyment may be turned into the desire for serving the mission of the Lord. By doing so, one's activity is engaged into karma yoga, or the way by which one can attain spiritual perfection while engaging in the work for which he has a natural tendency. Here the word Atma indicates the categories of all fruitive work. The conclusion is that when the result of all fruitive and other work is dovetailed with the service of the Lord, it will cease to generate further karma and will gradually develop into transcendental devotional service, which will not only cut off completely the root of the banyan tree of work, but will also carry the performer to the lotus feet of the Lord. The summary is that one has to, first of all, seek the association of pure devotees who not only are learned in the Vedanta, but are self-realized souls and unalloyed devotees of Lord Sri Krishna, the Personality of Godhead. In that association, the neophyte devotees must render loving service physically and mentally without reservation. This service attitude will induce the great souls to be more favorable in bestowing their mercy, which injects the neophyte with all the transcendental qualities of the pure devotees.
It's like if someone is assisting someone who has great love for the Lord, then he gets the benefit. And his love for Krishna is also developed because he's assisting. So that is what the neophyte devotees, especially in the Krishna consciousness movement, they are assisting the spiritual master in his mission. And of course, he's assisting his spiritual master in his mission, and in this way, it goes all the way back. So the mission begins with Lord Krishna. Atatasmam manusheshu kaschan me priyakritama. He wants to teach. That's why he spoke Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. If he had spoken to just an ordinary person, it would have been wasting his energy, in a sense, because an ordinary person wouldn't take it seriously. An ordinary person wouldn't surrender everything, as Arjuna did. That's what made it so dramatic, is that Arjuna took the words of Lord Krishna as his life and soul, and he followed it. And the result was glorious, because he became self-realized. And even from a dramatic material point of view, he won the battle of Kurukshetra. They were outnumbered, 11 Aksharahinis to 7. And not only that, but the other side had greater warriors. Bhishma, Drona, and Karna were unsurpassed. They were unconquerable, what to speak of Ashwatthama, others. So from the material point of view, they were in a better situation. But Krishna surrendered to the Lord without reservation, and consequently everything was victorious. He understood Bhagavad Gita. We can understand through the mercy of Krishna and Arjuna. Continue.
Gradually this is developed into a strong attachment to hearing the transcendental pastimes of the Lord, which makes him able to catch up the constitutional position of the gross and subtle bodies, and beyond them the knowledge of pure soul and his eternal relation with the Supreme Soul, the Personality of Godhead. After the relation is ascertained by establishment of the eternal relation, pure devotional service to the Lord begins gradually, developing into perfect knowledge of the Personality of Godhead beyond the purview of impersonal Brahman and localized Paramatma. By such Purushottama Yoga, as it is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, one is made perfect even during the present corporeal existence, and one exhibits all the good qualities of the Lord to the highest percentage. Such is the gradual development by association of pure devotees.
Yes. This was, you could say, the main thrust of Prabhupada's successful preaching, is that he asked people simply to do what they like to do or what they're already doing, but do it in a consciousness of Krishna. Like so many people are into music. So he engaged them, well, why don't you use your musical interest in kirtan, chanting the holy names? And they did it. And if someone was interested, even in San Francisco, the boys and girls were coming together to the temple, and they were living together without being married. And Prabhupada said, that's all right, you can be Krishna conscious, but why don't you get married? And they agreed. So everything can be dovetailed in Krishna's service. There's an example that you have an axe head. So if you get a piece of wood, then with that piece of wood, it can cut down the tree. Because without the axe head alone cannot do it. So it needs the help of a branch of the tree in order to cut it down. In the same way, we're using this body and the mind and karmana manasa gira. Mind, body, mind, words, body, mind, and words. Karmana manasa gira. Iha yasya hare dasye. Karmana manasa gira. Nikilas vapi avastasu. Jivan muktasu chite. Then one is liberated. He's engaged all of his faculties. Everybody's got senses. So, we learned from Ambarish Maharaj that he engaged his arms in cleansing the temple, cleaning the temple of the Lord. He engaged his eyes in seeing the beautiful form of the Lord. He engaged his ears in hearing the glories of the Lord. He engaged his tongue in tasting prasadam offered to the Lord. He engaged his head in bowing down. The head generally is, we become very proud. Sometimes if you ask someone to bow down, they say, I don't bow down. Well, they become proud. Why should I bow down? I'm equal to everyone. No one's greater than me. But no. The head, even if it's wearing a crown or a beautiful jeweled turban, it is a heavy burden only if he doesn't bow down his head before the Lord. Or the eyes which do not gaze upon the beautiful form of the Lord are like the eyes of the peacock, plumes of the peacock. They have no value. The body that is not used in the service of the Lord is a dead body. Although breathing, it's like a bellows. Do the bellows not breathe? Do the bellows not breathe? Do the animals not have sex? So all these different things. If they're not used in the service of the Lord, then they're simply like those of a dead man. Hands which do not work for the Lord, the legs which do not walk to the temple of the Lord are compared to tree trunks. They just stand in one place. What is the use? Do the trees not live? Everybody's eating. So that is not the purpose of life. Someone may say that according to statistics, of course we have some, it's not sure whether these statistics are fully accurate, but anyway, according to statistics, they say that the average age, life expectancy in 1900 was 48 years, 49 years. And now, worldwide it's 63, or at least in the, or 75 in the average. 63 is in some of the so-called less advanced countries. Of course, they didn't include the abortions. That would lower the, because 1/4 of all pregnancies end in divorce. Abortion in America. There are 3 million children born in America every year, and 1.3 million are aborted every year. So that's what, 25%. So even if you add the 25% abortions, supposedly the lifespan is greater now than it was in 1900. So, and the reason is supposedly that medical practices, health practices have improved. They have eliminated many types of diseases like plagues, the bubonic plague and different things like this. And they've learned how to extend one's life in the later days. So they, because of this, they're thinking that we're making improvement. We're extending life. It's not decreasing. They don't believe the Vedas that life is the lifespan is decreasing. So, of course, it's difficult to put one's faith in these because, for example, Prabhupada was telling us, and he was born in 1896, so his parents and grandparents, he was saying, his father was lived to be 70-something, his grandmother was 90, in her 90s, 80s and 90s. And they say that India formerly had, by the 1900, they say that the lifespan was 23 years. So, there may have been diseases, and so then they will say that this proves that we're making progress, because now at least we can live with our medical advancement. At least you can live a life of 75 years before you're living 20, 30 years. So we can't accept the Vedas. The Vedas are saying that the lifespan is decreasing. Yes, even if you say it's 75, we don't accept 75 because you have to add in the abortion. Knock off 25% of 75. That's about 17 years. So it comes down to 58. But according to the Vedic calculation, the lifespan is 100 years in this age. So it's gone down from 100 to 57. And that's just in 5,000 years. So you can't just look at 50 or 100 years. Look at 5,000 years. If you look at 5,000 years, you'll see that the lifespan went from 100 down to 57, 58. And it's continuing to go down. And then if we zoom out and look a little further, a broader view, we'll see that in the previous age, Dwapara Yuga, people were living 1,000 years. It's like in the Bible it says Methuselah lived 900 years. So people, even Christians, don't believe it because they don't understand that in previous ages people lived longer. And before that, the Treta Yuga, they lived 10,000 years, and Satya Yuga, they lived 100,000 years. Because it says that Dhruva Maharaj, he ruled for 36,000 years. Or Prahlad Maharaj was ruling for 36,000 years. For Dhruva. So how is it possible unless he had a lifespan? And of so long. And also we learn that Vishwamitra Muni was meditating for 60,000 years, practicing yoga. So unless he lived 100,000 years, how could he do that? The word is used here, Kriya Yoga. That term is popular now. People talk about Kriya Yoga. So Kriya Yoga means a karma yoga, to engage one's activities in the service of the Lord. Kriya Yoga, Karma Yoga, the beginning, when one's attached to a particular type of work. The difference is, when one is acting in Karma Yoga or Kriya Yoga, he's dedicating the results of his work to the Lord. Whereas in Bhakti Yoga, the activity, the work itself, is the offering. He doesn't have to offer the results because he's even offering the activity itself. Whereas in Karma Yoga, the person is still attached to doing a particular type of work. He likes to perform this work. He's attached. So Krishna says, all right, do it, but for me. Give me the results. Yat karoshi, yat dadasi, dadasi, yat, yat tapasya sikonteya, tat karusho varapadam. Everything that you do, eat and offer and give away, all austerities that you perform should be done as an offering to me. Now in bhakti yoga, one does everything for Krishna. His whole life, every moment, is dedicated. All of his work is centered around Krishna's pleasure, or shall we say, spreading the Sankirtan movement. This is the Krishna conscious movement. It's meant to give everyone a chance to get free from suffering. And everyone is suffering in this material world. Even if they think they're enjoying, they think they have a good life, they don't know what's waiting for them. Yamaraj, one devotee, was writing about her father, how he had to see Yamaraj and the Yamadutas, and it was very ferocious, very frightening experience. But this is what's happening. Everyone's preparing to go to the hell because they're disregarding. If we disregard Krishna's instructions, then why should we be surprised if we have to go to hell? Krishna is not an ordinary person speaking. You can disobey even a policeman to some extent. A policeman may say, don't do this. But you may do it and get away with it for some time. But Krishna, if he says don't do it, and we disregard, then he sends us to Yamaraj.
In the purport, it is said that this will make him able to catch up the constitutional position of the gross and subtle bodies.
Where is that?
The second page, the last paragraph. Gradually, this is developed.
What's gradually developed? Gradually?
Yeah. He says, what is the actual constitutional position of the gross and subtle bodies?
Gradually, this is developed into a strong attachment to hearing the transcendental pastimes of the Lord, which makes him able to catch up the constitutional position of the gross and subtle bodies, and beyond them, the knowledge of pure soul and his eternal relation with the Supreme Soul, the Personality of Godhead. Well, the constitutional position of the gross body is senses, and the subtle body means mind, intelligence, and ego.